for the subject, The Language of Responsibility, our own Dr. Wendell Johnson.
Thank you, Provost Davis. Officials of the university, candidates for degrees, and your families and friends, this is the moment that you have been waiting. Those of you behind the caps and gowns especially. Ever since you first went to the bank to deposit the money for Junior that he'd earned on the paper route, to start the going to college fund. This is a moment for you who are in the caps and gowns, a moment of achievement and of a new beginning. For the next little while, possibly 20 minutes, you will have time to reflect and to be thoughtful and to relish this moment. And I am deeply honored to be here with you to help you to relish it and to be thoughtful about it, to celebrate it. I want to visit with you about some of the observations that I have made during the 30 years since I was up here one night and received a doctoral degree. Observations that I have made of the people with whom I have worked in trying to help them with problems they've had, especially stuttering, but other kinds of problems also. I want to confide, though, commencement speaker has to make decisions. First, what to talk about. This is rather easy for me. I am not going to use this as an opportunity to present my favorite solution to the Congo crisis, or to the Cuban crisis, to the Berlin crisis. I have chosen to talk about something closer to me that I think I know more about. I think it is about something important. It's about you. And I should also, I feel, explain that there are really going to be two commencement speeches or addresses. There was the one I wrote, which published somewhere, I think, and the one I am now going to share with you. I like to write and I like to talk, but to me they are entirely different activities. I think the most interesting observation that I have made of people as I've tried to understand them, be helpful, is that they long to be understood and to be understanding. Almost all the problems they have, which are the most important to them, are related to the feelings they have that they're not understood, or to the feelings of uneasiness, guilt even at times, that they are not understanding of others who are important to them. And as people get better, as we say, as I know them, they become more considerate of others and more accepting of themselves, more understanding. And along with this, there goes a development of their responsibility, sense of responsibility. I had a teacher when I was a student here, a very fine teacher, psychiatrist, Dr. John Dorsey, summed this up one time by by saying that as we grow up, we pass through three stages. In the first, we say, please help me. In the second, we say, I can take care of myself now. In the third, we say, please let me help you. And there is, I think, a very fundamental kind of relationship between the sense of responsibility and the capacity to understand, and very especially the capacity of the individual to feel understood. I think anybody who works in a clinic, as I have over the years, cannot help but feel that the most important thing in the world, the thing we need most, is to have more understanding among people. We don't like to face it, but husbands and wives and children, parents and teachers and students seem so often to be reaching for each other across a hopeless gulf. Why don't we understand each other better? I think one of the reasons, and it's one of those tantalizingly obvious and simple reasons, the truth almost always turns out to make us feel foolish when we find it. One of the reasons we don't understand each other better is that we're not alike. No two of us are alike. For years I've been trying to help the students in speech pathology training program try to learn to know what it can be like to understand a person who can't talk well, who stutters, or who has some other barrier to communication. I'm terribly impressed with how hard they try. I'm just as impressed with how difficult they find it. And then I remember the people I find it hard to understand myself. And among them are the students. They talk normally, you see. And while I can understand, I think, what it feels like, I can now. I never used to, but I can now. What it feels like to talk pretty well. Reasonably well. Because most of the time I think I talk fairly fluently. Yet, even I can't understand what it must be like for you not to have any doubt at all that you can get started and keep going. You see, there is here a generalization. It's just as hard for the person who is not like you to understand you as it is for you to understand the difference. There is a kind of aloneness from which you can never escape. The most important thing to understand, I feel sure, is the limitation to our ability to understand. There is a silent level of experience. The feeling you have in your bones, the level of ache and throb. It's what you have left when you have done all you know how to tell someone else what you feel. If you expect others to understand that too, then you will feel that you're not understood. There is an aloneness, a loneliness that everyone knows. And to understand this is to be understanding. It is to be accepting of the difference of the other individual. This is the way to
the alleviation of the ravages of prejudice, the acceptance of the difference of the other person, and the acceptance of your own uniqueness. And when you have accepted this, you can feel serene. We can't expect others to understand us more than we can understand them. I remember one night I was sitting somewhere in a hotel lobby with Earl Schenck Myers. He's one of the very famous, but great human being. One of the many I have met in the work I have done with handicapped persons. Earl Schenck Myers is a tall, sort of a shaggy-headed fellow with steady brown eyes and unsteady movements. He accommodates himself with patience and dignity to the incoordinations of cerebral palsy. He's also a great editor, the author of a number of fine books. We were talking to a man in a wheelchair who sat between us, and he'd had his legs amputated. And Earl Myers looked at him very earnestly, and he said, "You know, you can't expect people to know just what to do when they first see you." And then after a little while, he said, "You know, those of us," and he sort of smiled, he said, "those of us who are handicapped, we have to learn to put others at ease when we meet them." He said, "It's our responsibility to try our best to understand them." Now, of course, he was talking to all of us, not just to the man in the wheelchair. If you had observed the people that I have in the clinic, I think you would feel very sure. What happens as a person learns to come to terms with his problems, to live with them better or to solve them, and the meanings that word can have, he progresses from the condition where he is confused and troubled. And in this condition, he talks a vague language. The language of the troubled is vague. And I think one of the main reasons why it is that they don't really face reality. So they don't talk about it in detail. They talk in generalities. It's a language which serves as a kind of a cushion between them and the painful facts. They are, in Dr. Dorsey's first stage, they're saying to you, "Please help me, I don't understand." They talk a wishful language. It seems to reflect a world that is too pat. It's a world that is black and white and doesn't have the grays that the wise and the mature are so very, very sensitive to. And as they get better, as we say, they learn to do what is done by all of the professional helpers and the professional problem solvers. See, in all of the helping professions, in medicine, speech pathology and audiology, psychology, all of the other helping professions, there's something everyone does They take it for granted so much that they hardly ever say it or mention it. It's simply this. They know that in order to understand anything, in order to solve a problem, one has to observe the facts. One has to engage his attention with reality. One has to report what he observes very responsibly. One has to infer from these observations with a discipline, and always to conclusions that are for the time being. Tentative, we say, to be tested. They serve as the further questions which lead to new observations to be reported responsibly, so that the old conclusions can be reevaluated, and so we can grow into more and more adequacy. This is the behavior and the language of responsibility, of maturity. This is the way you can help others, and others can help you, and the way you can take care of yourself. Well, you come here tonight by a zaggedy path from the time when you needed your parents almost always, or someone almost always, to help you. And now tonight, for your parents, this is commencement too, because they have to face, as never before, your wanting now to take care of yourselves. And even with all of your wanting to take care of yourselves, you will learn, of course, that you need help sometimes. I think that the most distinctive mark of the very mature person is that he seeks help. He seeks criticism. He values it. He uses it well. And if you haven't learned, you will quite soon, as you go along, that there's a very, very wonderful sort of truth, and that is that there are times when you can help others most by letting them help you, and others can help you most by letting you help them. As you gain the maturity and the serenity that comes from accepting your aloneness and the difference of the other person, and as you learn responsibility and the language of responsibility, you are able to move into the future with a feeling that you can. You can meet the problems that you are going to have to meet. And you go, I know, very, very well, into a future that will grow more complex with the years, more baffling and ominous at times. We do have tremendous, tremendous problems, more than we know. Urbanization, automation, population, nationalism, crime, delinquency, family deterioration, baffling and challenging and rather disturbing preoccupation with outer space, hijacking. I know you will have to wrestle with these problems, and as well as with your own personal perplexities. And which of these you're going to find the more enormous is a question. But I feel sure that hour to hour, moment to moment, it will be your your personal difficulties that are going to matter more to you. And that's why I have talked to you as I have. And I have talked to you as I have because I agree with the Chinese philosopher Confucius in the conviction that if you are to govern the state at all wisely, you must first learn to govern the family. And if you are to govern the family at all well, you must first be understanding of yourself. And with these thoughts, I wish you well and with good hope.
You have been listening to the principal address at the August commencement exercises at the State University of Iowa. The speaker was Dr. Wendell Johnson, professor of speech pathology and psychology here at the university.